Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. We start with the good, and we're back to Huma Abedin and her esteemed husband in the good martini. This, according to John Solomon's reporting in the Washington Times, federal investigators formally investigated top Hillary Rodham Clinton aide Huma Abedin for the crime of embezzlement after confirming she took a baby moon vacation and maternity time at the State Department without expending her formal leave, resulting in thousands of dollars of pay she wasn't entitled to receive. The probe also gathered evidence she filed timesheets charging the government for impermissible overtime and excessive hours after she converted from a full-time federal employee to a State Department contractor. Ms. Abedin, who served as deputy chief of staff to Mrs. Clinton from 2009 to late 2012, told investigators she had not noticed she had received a $33,000 lump sum payment, about a third of which investigators determined was improper when she left the State Department. Here's the best part. She suggested her husband, the disgraced former Congressman Anthony Weiner, failed to let her know. Quote, "My husband handles all the finances in our household," she told investigators during a recorded interview in October 2014. Jim, I'm pretty sure this is the same investigation that Abedin is now taking legal action against Chuck Grassley for ruining her reputation for, that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. But once again, it looks like there's fishy business very close to Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, this is the part that jumped out at me, Greg, is the observation. She's deputy chief of staff to Hillary Clinton from 2009 to late 2012. She told investigators she hadn't noticed she had received a $33,000 lump sum payment, about a third of which the investigators determined was improper when she left the State Department. I understand it's not always easy to keep track of the household finances, but Greg, if you suddenly found $33,000 more in your account than you expected to have, wouldn't that stand out to you?
Yeah, I'd probably notice that, yes.
I mean, just how wealthy are you when $33,000 comes across as a rounding error? But then the explanation is even better, because she suggested her husband, the disgraced former Congressman Anthony Weiner, failed to let her know. Quote, "My husband handles all the finances in our household," she told investigators during a recorded interview in October 2014. Insert the punchline here. You know, I'm kind of picturing, you know, he's on the computer all hours into the night working on the family finances, you know. I leave during the day. He says, "Hey, I'll be on the computer all day." You know, you can fill in the jokes here. Either Huma Abedin and Anthony Weiner are just unbelievably wealthy and are just rolling in money to the point where they get a $33,000 payment and she doesn't notice. Or she knew it and she didn't really care, and now she's pleading ignorance. And she, you know, a lot of this stems from the fact that, you know, she was on maternity leave, went on vacation, but still was getting paid for maternity leave, and thus she got paid. She took vacation days and didn't tell state she was taking vacation days. And as a result of that, they, you know, when she left, they paid her for her vacation days, and that's why about $11,000 was paid to her that shouldn't have been paid to her. You're like, oh, does this really matter? Well, this is technically embezzlement. This is technically taking money from the government that you weren't entitled to. This is a fairly serious one. She's Hillary's right-hand woman. And it just kind of adds to the you know, atmosphere and the sense of a culture of corruption surrounding the Clintons, the sense that, you know, that no matter how wealthy they are, they always want more money and they don't believe the rules apply to them, which is not good news if you're Hillary Clinton and you need stories like this to go away.
On to the bad martini now. This courtesy of the Daily Beast, and this is definitely bad news. Two senior analysts at Central Command signed a written complaint sent to the Defense Department Inspector General in July, alleging that the reports from intelligence professionals, some of which were briefed to President Obama, portrayed the terror groups as weaker than the analysts believe they are. The reports were changed by CENTCOM higher-ups to adhere to the administration's public line that the U.S. is winning the battle against ISIS and al-Nusra, al-Qaeda's branch in Syria. That complaint was supported by 50 other analysts, some of whom have complained about politicizing the intelligence reports for months. That's according to 11 individuals who are knowledgeable about the details of the report and spoke to the Daily Beast on condition of anonymity. The analysts have accused senior-level leaders, including the director of intelligence and his deputy in CENTCOM, of changing their analyses to be more in line with the Obama administration's public contention that the fight against ISIS and al-Qaeda is making progress. The analysts take a more pessimistic view about how military efforts to destroy the groups are going. Jim, This is incredible. I don't know if this is coming from on high. I don't know if it's to stroke the president's ego so he actually believes that the fight's going far better than it really is. But why would people just try to fool themselves when that's not the reality here?
This is a triply troubling story, Greg. I mean, first, this is going on, that basically there's no sense that that we need to have accurate information. It's okay to fool ourselves. It's okay to lie to the public. Two, this isn't just shading or changing word choice or spin. When you've got 50 people coming out, you know it's a serious enough problem. This isn't just one or two disgruntled guys being upset about this. This clearly means that they rank and file analysts, the people whose job is to assess how we're doing in this, are coming to a clear conclusion, and the, you know, what's being told to the public is completely different. Here's the third aspect that I think is really troubling about this, Greg. Do you think we're beating ISIS?
No.
Okay, this is a really ineffective conspiracy to fool the public. Like, they're not even good at it. Because I can't encounter people who actually think we're doing that well against ISIS. So why are we attempting this spin if nobody believes it anyway? I was having this argument with somebody recently. We're not that old, Greg. You know, if you remember the Iraq War, if you remember the Persian, I remember when the United States was doing hundreds of sorties a day, right?
Yes.
Daily Pentagon briefings. Here's what we're doing. Norman Schwarzkopf showing the guy driving through the crosshairs in the sight of the bomber and stuff like that. We know what a country at war looks like. We are not on a wartime footing. This is not a wartime administration. The administration wants us to largely forget about the fact that we're at war with ISIS. And what's more, they want us to generally believe this is a faraway problem, not something we need to worry about. Everything's hunky-dory. Look at the president's NCAA picks. Look at this cool selfie he took up in Alaska, et cetera, et cetera. We're seeing this wave of migrants and refugees in Europe and this sense of chaos spreading out from the Middle East. The entire administration seems to be in denial. And so that's why stories like this feel very believable. This is an administration that doesn't really want to see what's going on because it would mean they'd be forced to acknowledge their policies are failing.
Wow. All right. On to the crazy martini now. And back to Donald Trump. He spent a lot of time here lately after suggesting he always felt like he was in the military because he went to a military-style high school for a while. Jim, now he is going after two of his presidential rivals, particularly those who have also not held public office. In some of the national polls, Trump is still ahead, but those in second and third, increasingly doing better and better, are Ben Carson and Carly Fiorina, most likely because they've still got that outsider persona, people sick and tired of Washington. And so in a new Rolling Stone piece that focuses on Donald Trump, they talk about his reaction to watching TV and Carly Fiorina coming on. Look at that face. Would anyone vote for that? Can you imagine that? The face of our next president? I mean, she's a woman, and I'm not supposed to say bad things, but really, folks, come on. Are we serious? So Trump is on CNN this morning with Chris Cuomo, and he responded to that particular quote. And here's what he said first.
The fact is that Carly Fiorina has had a terrible past. She was fired viciously from Hewlett-Packard, the dean of
the— But then you should say that.
And then he went on to say it again, and somehow this got back to his hair.
I'm talking about her persona. Her persona is not going to be, she is not going to be president.
But I don't know
she
about that.
She had a terrible, terrible failed time.
I don't know about that. I'll tell you why. I hear everything you're saying about the record. They're all legitimate bases for criticism that you can level against one of your opponents, but I'm just reading the quote for what it is. Look at that face. Why would anyone vote for that? Can you imagine that's the face of our next president? I mean, she's a woman. I'm not supposed to say bad things, but really, folks, come on. Are we serious? That's
Chris,
not about persona.
I'm talking persona.
How?
And when she
Where's
hits
persona
me on my
that?
Hair, I know that's okay, and you won't
that's,
defend
that's
me.
That's tit for tat. That's
tit
for
tat. I think you know me well enough. It is my hair.
And then, if that weren't enough, he went after Ben Carson. Carson went after Trump a little bit in recent days because Donald Trump is fond of saying The Art of the Deal is his second favorite book behind the Bible. He was asked by someone, what's your favorite passage? He declined to give one, saying it was too personal. On Megyn Kelly's show the other night, Ben Carson gave three or four different verses that he says are very precious to him. And so Trump blasted Carson for questioning his faith, and then he went after his medical record as well.
He was a doctor, perhaps a, you know, an okay doctor, by the way. You can check that out, too. We're not talking about a great... He was an okay doctor.
I don't know about okay doctor. You know, he was the first
was
man to separate
fine.
Conjoined
and now,
twins.
Because he's
you know.
A doctor and he hired one nurse, he's going to end up being the president of the United States?
Jim, Hewlett-Packard is fair game. You could go after Ben Carson's statements on a variety of things. I think pretty much he's widely acclaimed to be a phenomenal doctor. And this just shows that Donald Trump, who's supposed to be the tough guy, can't take a punch very well.
I have to give some credit here. You know, listeners to our program, followers of National Review will know. I'm not a fan of Trump, and I have tangled with his fans quite a bit these past couple of weeks. And one of my laments has been that nothing seems to bother these people, that they're perfectly okay with anything Trump does. And that if he went on a chainsaw massacre, he'd say, you know, Jim, this shows that only Trump has the nerve to do what needs to be done around here. But to your credit, some Trump fans are saying, you know what, this really is too far. This really is out of line, uncalled for, and I'm disappointed in him. And so I give him credit. There are some folks out there who are willing to say when they feel like they're not willing to just blindly applaud everything he does. I'd written up a portion of the Jolt on this and said, you know, I think we've reached outrage fatigue with Donald Trump, that, you know, within 24 hours, he'll say something else even more shocking and we won't even be thinking about the Fiorina comment. Well, I didn't have to wait 24 hours. This morning he does the Carson comment. And we, you know, if you want to say Carson was out of line for questioning Trump's faith, fine. I don't think Trump is any better questioning Carson's faith. And by the way, like when Donald Trump calls communion the little cracker, you know, I think it is fair to question how seriously he takes religious matters. But fine, that's a separate issue. But then the comment, he's an okay doctor. He's a brain surgeon who separated the conjoined twins after like a 23-hour procedure. This is considered one of the hardest and most difficult and most amazing surgical feats of all time. And he's an okay. He's not great. It's like saying Tiger Woods, he's an okay golfer, you know, back when he was winning all those matches. Michael Jordan, he could play a little ball. He was all right, you know. And I think one of my favorite assessments was, oh, Mr. Feels Like a Veteran now feels like he could do surgery because he played Operation as a kid.
23 hours, Jim? It took him 23 hours to separate?
Yeah, speed it up a little. Come on.
I could have done it in an hour and a half.
I've casinos quicker than that. So, yeah. And again, so maybe this is the moment where, you know, when, some of Trump's supporters say, whoa, you're going a little too far. We can argue how important an off-the-cuff record, a comment about Carly Fiorina ought to be. I think almost everybody with eyes would say, no, Carly Fiorina looks fine. She's not, you know. Secondly, this is the office that had LBJ, Nixon, Taft, Hayes, and oh, by the way, Donald Trump, you're no prize yourself. So we really don't think presidential candidates should be assessing each other based on their physical appearance and things like that. But what's interesting is that this is not in front of the cameras. This is not part of his showboating. Yes, there was a Rolling Stone reporter there, so obviously he had a he knew he was on the record, or at least being, you know, listened to. This was not an off-the-record comment. But what's interesting is that without an audience, and he said it anyway, Greg, kind of suggesting that this is who he is. This is not some bombastic act he puts on for ratings or something like that. I think he just, you know, is a jerky guy who says jerky things. And do we want that in the Oval Office for 48 years?
Yeah, I don't think anybody's questioning the persona. He's been a public figure long enough to know that this is his personality. And again, a very good question as to whether we want this to be the standard bearer for the conservative movement going forward when a lot of these same character traits are what have really infuriated us in recent years. So anyway, I'm sure we'll get some more emails after this crazy martini. So buckle up for that. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.